So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government instead of from those who would take away our freedom. If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, there is no freedom.
They'll never take our freedom!
There are too many guns on the street. We lose 93 million Americans a day to gun violence.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freedom Rings. This is Tommy Freedom reaching you loud and clear on the alt-right frontier. I'll be your voice of reason for the next 30 minutes, so keep it right here. You are tuned in on the TFR Radio Network, broadcasting to you from a log cabin in a secret mountaintop location somewhere in Appalachia on White America Radio. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Freedom Rings. Now, last week, I actually ran out of time as I was going over white history for July. So the first thing I'm going to do before I get back into the show is to finish that up and then go over some things that are going on. There is quite a bit going on this week. Charlotte, North Carolina here, the area near where I live, is one of two finalists for the Republican National Conference, which would be awesome if we could get that. We had the Democratic National Conference here back in 2012, and there were some shenanigans that went on, but not as much as we're going to have this time around if it's the Republicans, because Antifa is going to show up, all kinds of left-wing groups are going to show up and cause all kinds of trouble and probably start riots again. So we're not looking forward to that aspect of it, but we are definitely looking forward to all the business that it will generate for the city of Charlotte and the surrounding areas, just millions and millions of potential dollars in revenue. So let me get back to finishing up white history. I believe last week I finished off on July 16th, 1769, Spanish friar Junipero Serra founded Mission San Diego de Alcala. The mission later evolved into the city of San Diego. On July 16, 1782, Mozart's opera Die Aufführung aus dem Saal was performed in the Burgtheater in Vienna, and I did that in French again instead of German. I got a bad habit of doing that. It should have been something more along the lines of Die Aufführung aus dem Saal. Yeah, that's better. At the Burgtheater in Vienna. You happy now, George? Are you happy now? On July 16th in 1969, NASA launched Apollo 11 on the first manned mission to the surface of the moon. On July 17th, 1918, the Romanov family were killed by communist Jews, commonly known as the Bolsheviks, which led the Bolshevik Revolution. On July 18th in 1968, the Intel Corporation was founded by Gordon Moore and Robert Nice. Did not realize it had been around for that long, 50 years, wow. On July 19th, 1963, American Joe Walker flew a North American X-15 to a record altitude of 106,010 meters. There it is, metric again. At least this one has a conversion, so we all understand what this is. That's 347,800 feet. Thank you for including that. On X-15 Flight 90. Exceeding an altitude of 100 kilometers, which I can actually, let's see, that would be 3 miles, about maybe 62 miles. Oh, George is just telling me I should figure it 100 kilometers an hour like they have the signs in Canada, which is 62 miles an hour. Thank you, George. Yeah, okay. Exceeding an altitude of 62 miles, this flight qualified as a human space flight under international convention. On July 22nd, in 1456, the siege of Belgrade came to an end. Hungarian nobleman John Hunyadi defeated the forces of Ottoman, who's otherwise known as Sultan Mehmed II. On July 22nd, 1713, French neoclassical architect Jacques-Germain Soufflot was born in Irancy. So there I can use my French accent. He was the designer of the Pantheon in Paris, or Paris, as they say over there. On July 22nd, in 1793, Sir Alexander Mackenzie reached the Pacific Ocean, becoming the first man to complete a transcontinental crossing of Canada. On July 23rd, in 1777, German painter Philippe Otto Runge was born in Wolgast in western Pomerania. July 25th, 1909, Louis Berliot crossed the English Channel in a monoplane from Calais to Dover. This was the first international overseas plane flight. Not what we would consider an international overseas flight today, just going over the channel, but still it was an accomplishment for its time. 1909, only 6 years after the Wright brothers flew. That was amazing. On July 26th in 1958, the U.S. Army Ballistic Missile Agency launched the Explorer 4 satellite to study the Earth's Van Allen radiation belts. The instruments on board the satellite were designed and built by American scientist James Van Allen. Gee, I always thought they were named after him because he discovered them. Oh, okay, I guess it was on that flight that he did actually discover them. Okay. On July 26, 1963, NASA launched the SINCOM 2, the world's first geosynchronous communication satellite. Say that fast three times, George. On July 26, 1971, NASA launched Apollo 15. It was the fourth Apollo mission to land on the moon and the first to use the Lunar Roving Vehicle, commonly known as the LRV. On July 27th in 1667, Swiss mathematician Johann Bernoulli was born in Basel, one of the early developers of infinitesimal calculus. Completely out of my realm. I never did well in math. I did well in everything else except math. Could not comprehend even simple math for some reason. On July 27th, 1949, the world's first jet-propelled airliner, the British de Havilland Comet, was flown for the first time. On July 28, 1858, French photographer Caspard Félix Trenchon took the first aerial photographs while flying in a balloon over Paris. That's amazing. I didn't realize we had aerial photographs that far back. On July 29th, in 1851, the first photo of a total solar eclipse was taken 167 years ago by Johann Julius Friedrich Berkowski, a daguerreotypist. Did I get that correct? Daguerreotypist? Somebody help me out with that if you know how to actually pronounce this word, because it's one I've never come across before. Anyway, he took this photo at the Royal Observatory in Königsberg. Very, very interesting stuff. So thanks once again to Mike in New York for sending me these things, because he's got a source of finding these that I don't have, and it saves me the time of having to try and chase this stuff down. So Mike, thanks again. He sent me a few other things. If I have time, I'll go over them with you on this show as well. So as I told you earlier, we are one of the finalists for the Republican National Convention here in November. Is it November or is it October? It's one of the embers anyway. Did you ever think, I just thought about this the other day. Did you ever notice that September, October, November, and December are all in cold months? Yeah, you never picked up on that either, did you, George? Yeah. No, it's just something I just found interesting. So anyway, whenever it gets here, I'm thinking it's in November, but whenever it does get here, we are one of the two finalists. Las Vegas is the other one, and they are not expected to get it. There's just too much stuff still going on in people's minds about the shooting out there last year. It's not as well set up. We did an excellent job of hosting the Democratic National Convention back in 2012, and I think we're pretty much spot on as long as our city council agrees that we will continue to host it, that it will be awarded to us. So that'll be cool. That'll get us some more national exposure, hopefully good exposure this time, as opposed to the deadly riots that we had 2 years ago, which put Charlotte in a bad light. And this was on top of the Charlotte City Ordinance, the bathroom bill several years ago, where the state of North Carolina had to overturn that, resulting in all kinds of boycotts of the state of North Carolina. So hopefully that's all water over the dam, under the bridge, wherever it goes, out into the ocean, that won't come back to haunt us, and that we have a safe convention. So, speaking of gatherings, did y'all listen to the Peter Stroke Me Inquisition last week? It was very, very entertaining. I found some of the best moments for that, and I've put them together here for you in sort of like a montage. I mean, people were not taking any crap from him. And of course, the first thing that he did when they started questioning him was to say he couldn't answer the question because he'd been advised not to. And that didn't fly over too well, and he got yelled at several times. But I found these clips. I'm going to run them for you here in case that you missed them. See if you get as entertained as I do. And after they're over, then I'll go ahead and go to the break regardless of where it is, unless it's right at the very end, in which case I'll just keep going.
Not raise the attorney-client privilege. He has said that he's been instructed by the FBI not to answer the question. Now,
by lawyers.
He knows the advice I have just given him. If he would like, I'll restate it. But knowing this, will you answer the committee's question as directed, or do you refuse to answer the committee's question?
Point of parliamentary inquiry,
the ruling of the chair, that my
order
was not in order.
Point of parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman.
The gentleman from South Carolina has the time. A parliamentary inquiry is not in order during the gentleman's time. The chair is instructing the witness to answer the question, and the question to you is,
Mr. Chairman,
will you answer the committee's question as directed, or do you refuse to answer the committee's question?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
Second.
You're not recognized for that purpose.
Mr. Chairman, I think you have no choice but to recognize such a motion.
I do not have to.
Are you just going to make up rules as we go along?
My question is, if you were kicked off when you read the text, shouldn't you have been kicked off when you wrote them?
Not at all.
Well, it wasn't the discovery of your text, Mr. Strzok. It was the existence of your bias that got you kicked off.
No, Mr. Gowdy, it wasn't. I do not have bias. My personal opinions in no way.
Well, then why did you get kicked off? Why'd you get kicked off?
Mr. Gowdy, my understanding of why I was kicked off was that based on an understanding of those texts and the perception that they might create,
well, hang on a second, Agent Strzok. You're saying it was the perception there are 13 Democrats on the special counsel probe, including one who went to what he hoped was a victory party. That's a perception problem, too. They weren't kicked off. You were. Why were you kicked off?
Mr. Gowdy, I cannot speak to Special Counsel Mueller's.
How long did you talk to him?
These reasons why he did or didn't.
How long did you talk to him when he let you go?
Witness, answer the question.
Witness will be afforded the opportunity.
My recollection is it was a short meeting, somewhere between 15 to 30 minutes, probably around 15 minutes.
And your testimony is Bob Mueller did not kick you off because of the content of your text. He kicked you off because of some appearance that he was worried about. Sure.
My testimony, what you asked and what I responded to, was that he kicked me off because of my bias. I'm stating to you it is not my understanding that he kicked me off because of any bias, that it was done based on the appearance. If you want to represent what you said accurately, I'm happy to answer that question, but I don't appreciate what was originally said being changed.
I don't give a damn what you appreciate, Agent Strzok. I don't appreciate having an FBI agent with an unprecedented level of animus working on two major investigations during 2016.
Did you ever communicate with David Korn?
No.
Did you ever communicate with Glenn Simpson?
No.
Did you ever communicate with Nellie Orr?
No.
Did you ever communicate with Bruce Orr?
Yes.
When did you communicate with Bruce Orr?
My recollection is somewhere between three or four or five times in the late 2016, early 2017 timeframe.
What did you talk about?
We talked about investigative matters that Mr. Orr was involved in.
Did you talk about the investigation we're focused on here, Agent Strzok?
My direction from the FBI is that I may not answer that question, sir.
I got it. Let's go back to the email that you sent that you won't talk about. Are there three copies of the dossier as evidenced by what you said in this email?
Sir, to be clear, I want to talk about this email. I want nothing more
than
answer your question.
You can say that all you want, but you're not talking about it. You're not answering my questions. Are there three copies?
Three copies of what?
The McCain copy, the BuzzFeed copy, and the one that you got from Korn and Simpson.
Sir, the most I can say is we received a variety of copies of and different types of.
Let me ask you one other question. Glenn Simpson testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee on August 22, 2017. He was asked, did anyone from Fusion ever communicate with the FBI? His response, no. No one from Fusion ever spoke with the FBI. So here's what I'm having trouble understanding. If Glenn Simpson says no one ever spoke with the FBI, how is it that you got a copy of the dossier from Simpson?
Sir, I can tell you I never had contact with Fusion, with Mr. Simpson, with Mr. Korn. And again, sir.
Chairman, regular order.
The gentleman will have a few more seconds since he was interrupted.
Well, I mean... This is the frustration that every single member of this committee feels is when Agent Strzok won't answer, well, more importantly, the American people feel when Agent Strzok won't answer fundamental questions like the guy he references in an email, Korn and Simpson, and won't tell me who they are. This is unbelievable, but that's where it's gotten to now, and it's as frustrating as it can get, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond?
Briefly.
Sir, it is as frustrating to me as it is to you. I can tell you, sir, that I would love...
Well, you know what, Agent Strzok?
Mr. Chairman, may the witness be permitted to answer.
If it's so frustrating, answer the question.
If you'll allow him to, I'm sure he will.
He has never answered the question,
well,
who Gordon Simpson are.
Him.
We're about...
The gentleman, instruct the gentleman from Ohio to stop badgering and allow him to answer the question.
We're about to move on. The gentleman from Ohio's time's expired.
One of the things I found most egregious with Mr. Horowitz's testimony, and by the way, Horowitz got a call four times by someone wanting to brief him, leaving messages telling him about this, and he never returned the call. He had 500 pages of bias that he gave us, and then he threw a bone to the Democrats and said, but we can't find bias. And let me tell you, when you have text messages, Mr. Strzok, the way you do, saying the things you did, you'd been better off coming in here and say, look, that was my bias. And you kind of get around to that a little bit when you say, hey, you know, everybody's got political views. Those are called biases, and we all have them. And you have come in here and said, I had no bias. And you do it with a straight face. And I watched in the private testimony you gave, and I told some of the other guys, he is really good. He's lying. He knows. We know he's lying. And he could probably pass a polygraph.
Point.
It's amazing.
Mr. Chairman.
No, this is my
Mr.
time.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
It needs
point
to be
of order.
Paused.
This point of order.
No.
The general state is point of order.
A member of this committee just asserted that this witness, who is under oath and a former agent of the FBI, lied. There is no evidence of that. I ask him to withdraw it.
I do not withdraw it. He is not a member of Congress. It's not a violation of the rule. And just as you have been expressing bias through your members about what a hero
there is not a single person on this committee who has ever characterized a witness as a
gentleman from Rhode Island. Gentlemen,
it's my time.
That's a disgrace.
Gentlemen from Rhode Island will suspend.
Him. No, the disgrace Mr. is what this man has done.
The gentleman
to
from
justice.
Texas will suspend for a
there
moment.
There is the disgrace. And it won't be recaptured anytime soon because of the damage you've done to the justice system. And I've talked to FBI agents around the country. You've embarrassed them. You've embarrassed yourself. And I can't help but wonder, when I see you looking there with a little smirk, how many times did you look so innocent into your wife's eye and lie to her about Lisa?
Mr. Chairman, it's outrageous.
The credibility of a witness
shame
is always
on you,
an
Chairman.
Issue.
Mr.
And you
Chairman, please.
Have you
Mr.
Know,
Chairman, this is an intolerable harassment of the witness.
What is wrong with that? You need your medication.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Well, I certainly concur with that last statement. I mean, my God, the Dingaling Brothers' Backyard and Family Circus would have had a field day with that. Everything going back and forth from here to there. Different shows going on all at the same time. It was just, it boggles the mind, folks. It really does. This is what goes on in our Congress now because of the way the liberals have taken it over. This could not have been a simple questioning that was professionally done. He had to skirt around the issues, and that is when this literally turned into a three-ring circus. I mean, really, the only thing that was missing was this.
You can't handle the truth!
I mean, I fully expected to see Jack Nicholson pop up and do that, or I expected Peter Strokeme to suddenly jump up and say, "You can't handle the truth!" I mean, it was just, talk about a dog and pony show. But there is some good news, folks. The Republicans in Congress have finally had it with the entire Mueller investigation and Rod Jusenstein. And they announced on Friday that they were seriously considering impeaching Rod Rosenstein after this latest fiasco with more Russians being indicted in this whole... Again, this is another dog and pony show. The Mueller investigation. And oh, by the way, I don't have time to go to a break here. It's too far in, so I'm just going to coast through to the end here. But that was really refreshing to see because people have had it. Everybody knows that Jusenstein is a stooge. He's a lackey. Left over from the Obama years, and I don't care what Trump did when he put him in. He was trying to get people in there simply to get people in office until he could handpick who he needed. And these people have turned on him. They're part of the deep state. Well, now it looks like the tables are finally starting to turn on them. And if they impeach him, that will be a very strong signal for what is yet to come. And I've discussed this on here with you before, folks. What I have heard through the grapevine is actually going on regarding the Illuminati and all those involved with the deep state. And if it ever happens, it will be beautiful. Can't wait. But in the meantime, I want to share an article with you. It's from the NRA and their Institute for Legislative Action. It's an article. It's called "Too Young or Too Old to Own a Gun?" Well, folks, we've been looking at the way that they've been trying to raise the age to own a firearm. But now it appears they're going the opposite way. Perhaps you will be too old to own a firearm. At some point, you're not capable of handling a firearm responsibly anymore. So let me read this article here for you. A common theme among anti-gun extremists is what we often refer to as the Goldilocks approach to limiting access to firearms by law-abiding citizens. Rather than admit that the ultimate goal is to disarm all Americans, those opposed to the Second Amendment create fictional arguments about why certain types of firearms, ammunition, or even accessories should be eliminated. In the 70s, the goal was to ban handguns. Since they could be carried concealed for personal protection, they were seen as being too small. That argument fell out of fashion as more and more states passed right-to-carry laws that recognized the right to personal protection. One subset of the anti-gun hysteria included inexpensive handguns that were the so-called Saturday night specials, which were deemed too cheap. When NRA and others pointed out that this was an obvious attempt to disarm lower-income citizens, who are often at a higher risk for being victims of violent crime, the term Saturday night special faded from the gun ban lexicon. Another subset of the attack on handguns came with the introduction of Glocks and other handguns that use polymers as part of their construction. They were falsely claimed to be able to pass through metal detectors and X-ray machines undetected, and thus too invisible to be screened where firearms are prohibited. Well, of course, they're talking about the airports. And again, this was quickly dispelled. ammunition has been attacked as too lethal, too untraceable, too bad for the environment, you know, meaning lead, too inexpensive, yeah, so let's tax it, and any number of other twos. Rifles have been called too powerful, too modifiable, too accurate, too similar to actual military arms, and the list goes on. Boiled down to its essence, after wading through a myriad of to-this and to-that arguments, the just-right Goldilocks of guns would likely be a break-action 22 rifle, although finding acceptable lead-free ammunition might be a bit difficult. But the anti-gun extremists can still claim they don't want to ban all guns. The latest approach to the Goldilocks-style gun control, though, seems to be focusing less on what you own and focusing more on who can own firearms. And we don't mean people with criminal records. After the horrific tragedy that took place in Parkland, Florida, this became a new battle cry for those seeking to limit age ownership, meaning age. I'm sorry, to limit gun ownership, meaning age. Rather than focusing on the obvious failures at various levels of government to identify the copious warning signs exhibited by the alleged perpetrator, extremists decided to focus on the fact that law-abiding citizens are able to exercise their rights protected under the Second Amendment when they reach the age of 18. Although responsible young adults regularly leave home, join the military, get married, and begin voting at this age, the anti-gun community has decided this age is too young for one to exercise the right of gun ownership. 18-year-olds have been prohibited from purchasing and possessing rifles and shotguns at the federal level, and even in the vast majority of states since the founding of our country. Nonetheless, because of the violent acts of one individual, we have seen an onslaught of legislation throughout the country that seeks to raise the minimum age to purchase and or possess rifles and shotguns from 18 to 21. Because common sense has taken a backseat to raw emotionalism in today's gun control debate, some of those efforts have even seen success. But being deemed too young to own firearms is not the only threat to face the pro-Second Amendment community. There may be a new approach to beginning to form. You might soon be deemed too old. An article by Jonelle, Alicia, and Melissa Bailey, published by Kaiser Health News and PBS NewsHour, has begun making the rounds with a number of media outlets such as CNN, and it discusses the issue of gun owners who may be suffering from dementia. Yeah, right. Jeez. My God. Where is this going to end, folks? I mean, it never ends. They try and attack us from every single angle. And it doesn't matter what we do. And reading the rest of that article is pointless, because all it does is just go on to reaffirm that they're saying that at a certain age, you are no longer sane enough to own a firearm. And it's incredible. And the reason for this is because older folks, typically veterans, realize that if it ever comes down to something between us and them, that those folks will probably make the decision to sacrifice their lives to save those of younger people. And this terrifies the hell out of the left. They can't deal with the fact that there are people out there who are willing to die for their cause. It saddens me, folks. It really saddens me that they've gone to this length, but I'm not surprised. I really am not. I never really actually thought about age being a factor until this was brought to my attention, but it certainly makes sense in the progressive left and the Jewish attempt to overthrow the Christian values of this country. They're panicking, my friends, and I am out of time. As always, if you want to get in touch with me, you may do so by emailing me at TommyFreedomRings@yahoo.com. Until next week, my friends, this has been Tommy Freedom for Freedom Rings. Out for now.